welcome to the Earfluence Podcast, which is a podcast about podcasting from a podcast production company. I'm your host, Jason Gillikin, CEO of Earfluence, and with me as always is Cece Huffman, Swiss Army Knife at Earfluence. What's going on, Cece?
I'm just happy to be here, honestly. I feel like I've been away from home for so long that I forgot what my actual day-to-day life was like, so I'm grateful to be back to it for sure. And I'm excited about our episode today because Mark and I went to college together and we were like the tech team in college. And now here we are being the tech team again.
That's awesome. So yeah, we have a guest on, Mark Meyer, who is audio editor extraordinaire at Earfluence. And sure enough, Cece and Mark went to college together. And true story, I think Cece trained Mark initially mm-hmm. and how to do some audio production.
So we definitely learned a lot from each other though. I will say that.
Yeah.
Very different sets of skills.
Well, great to have you back. You were traveling for 2 weeks at a wedding, helping your friends out, having a good time, and you made it back to Raleigh.
Yeah, by the grace of God.
All right. Well, let's get to Mark. So, Mark, welcome to the Earfluence Podcast. It's great to have you.
It's great to be here, y'all. I've been looking forward to this.
Yes, all three employees are here together.
That's right. That's right. So, Mark is our latest hire. So excited to have a team in place. It's growing. It's just so exciting here. And it is, Mark, you have taken so much off of my plate, so much off of Cece's plate, mm-hmm. So much off of, you know, the 7 freelancers plates that we were using before. But we certainly appreciate it, man. So welcome.
Yeah.
Like I said, you know, it's great to be here today, but also it's great to be on board with the company. Like thinking about where I was previously in my career and thinking about the sort of work that I've wanted to do for a long time, it's just like such a great fit.
Awesome. So Mark, you are doing all the editing and I want to get into editing process and you know how a podcaster just starting out can do some editing, you know, from the perspective of an expert audio engineer, an expert editor. But I want to know from you first, like, how did you get into audio? How did you get into podcasts? Like what's exciting about podcasting to you?
Well, I think, you know, to take the long road, when I was in high school, like 10 years ago, I was really into video at the time. And I also was really into playing in bands. And I was getting a lot of experience working with microphones and getting a lot of experience using recording software. Mm-hmm. And I always sort of thought that as a career path, it wasn't really going to work out for me as a very competitive sort of field. But, you know, just persevering through it. And then when I went back to college, this was not sort of the thing that I pictured myself doing. I sort of was doing more video work when I got into school. But then it ended up just being a more natural fit for my skill set. I think at this point in my life, I've just got more of a trained ear than a trained eye.
So what were some of the first podcasts that you worked on?
The first podcast that I worked on was while I was in school. It was called the Not a Novel Podcast, and it was sort of a forum podcast for some grad students in the English department at UNC. The format was they would read a book or they would watch a movie, and they would come together and they'd talk about it. And I was sort of like the technical producer there. I was running the mics, sitting with the headphones on, making sure everyone sounded good, and it was a struggle. It was more about the experience of recording for these grad students. It was mm-hmm. more for them to just have a good time and come together and talk about it. Nobody was really, you know, on the mic. Nobody was monitoring themselves. And so as far as editing, you know, it was just difficult because here I am, you know, just trying to get like the absolute most out of it that I can. But it was a great experience nonetheless because I worked really closely with someone who had been editing podcasts for a long time. And they sort of showed me like what they were doing in Audacity to, you know, cut it up, what they were doing to get the best sound. And then I'd say after that, the next big podcast I worked on was, it was the Southern Futures podcast with UNC, the Department of American Studies. And it was great. You know, I was working with a broadcast journalist. I was getting a script and sort of working with her files. And it was just fantastic because not only was I like working with really high quality materials, it was just like it felt like really impactful work.
Yeah.
So, all right, getting back to the first one, I hear that every day in conversations with podcasters that there is such a high from recording an episode and they just love the thrill of being on a podcast and having a great conversation. And then a couple days later, when they sit down to edit it, it's like, oh, crap.
Yeah, like, I messed up, huh?
It's not even that. Like, I just got to edit this stuff. And, like, this is not enjoyable. The high is gone from there because you have to edit it. So hopefully in this recording, we can make the editing process a little bit easier. Cece, you worked with Mark at Carolina. Talk about your interactions with him. And when I said, hey, do you know any audio engineers? The first name that you thought of was Mark.
Yeah. So we both worked on Carolina Connection, which is UNC Hussman's like NPR class, essentially, or NPR team. So we did a 30-minute long weekly news show on WCHL in Chapel Hill. And I had done it, I think it was like my third semester at this point doing this. So I had started as like a reporter, and then I was a technical producer, and then I was just the producer of the show. And so that meant that I spent a lot of time running around, like looking at everybody's cuts, even though it's just like 2-minute long story, making sure there's no like weird audio cuts or everything fades right, you know, stuff like that. Just putting the final touches on things. And that's a lot to do as one person. And Mark was in the class. And so our professor was like, why don't you go and show Mark what you're doing? And then y'all can do this together. And we would have to get up at like 6 a.m. on Saturday mornings to go and work the actual soundboard at the radio station. And I didn't want to do that every Saturday morning either. And so we ended up just kind of being a team in that. And honestly, with peace and love to everybody in that class, there was nobody who knew as much as Mark and I did about how to do all of this stuff. So, I mean, he was the obvious answer for that.
Awesome. That's great. And so what was the show or podcast about?
So, I mean,
a radio show.
Yeah, it was a news show. So it was reporting on things happening at the university, things happening in Chapel Hill, and then like feature stories as well.
Yeah.
And sports.
And sports.
Yeah.
Which is at Carolina, sports.
Yeah, but nobody wanted to do sports either. So I was either doing sports or I was on the board. So I ended up going pretty much every Saturday, but it's fine. I'm not bitter about it at all.
Wow. And Mark, your previous job, you were having to wake up way earlier than 6 o'clock.
We
won't get it. We don't have to get into that.
It hurt me just getting here at 11, y'all.
So Mark, I want to get into some tips for podcasters that are learning how to edit or just trying to make it easier for them to do the editing, because it can be so daunting when you're first starting out and you're like, I have never edited sound before. I have no clue. And yes, of course, you can look up things on YouTube, but you can go down a rabbit hole and you're not sure whether that means you should be using Audacity or you should be using Audition or you should be doing whatever else. You can go down the rabbit hole on YouTube and all the sales materials out there.
Yeah, everything will tell you something different.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And like, you're not sure what mic you need to use. You're not sure if you can just use your iPhone to record a podcast. So like, there's so much out there. And so we want to hear it from an expert on what to do to edit a podcast. So Mark, let's start from the beginning. Like, let's start with microphones. Let's say you've got a podcast and it happens to be that you can record together, but typically there's going to be two people or three people within the studio or whatever you make the studio out to be. What kind of microphones should we be looking for?
Well, that's a good question. And you have to sort of think about your needs. I think ultimately you got to start the editing process even before you're recording in pre-production. How many people, like you said, how many people are going to be on? Are you going to be recording remote or in person? And these sorts of questions are going to go into what kind of gear you need. So if we're talking about microphones, you got to think about what kind of recording environment you're going to be in. The biggest question you have to ask yourself first is, do you want a dynamic microphone or a condenser microphone?
And what's the difference?
A dynamic microphone is typically used more for live events, but it's also pretty popular for podcasts. They are a little bit less sensitive, but they do a good job if you're in an environment that's got a higher level of background noise.
Right.
The condenser mic, on the other hand, is going to be a bit more sensitive. It's going to pick up more of the sounds, but the trade-off there is it's got a better frequency response. And what that means is it's going to get more of that bass and more of that high-end information. So like, if somebody's got like a really like crisp high voice, it's going to pick that up. Or if somebody's got a nice low voice, you know, it's going to get that better.
Right, like ASMR microphones.
Exactly. That's the popular choice for ASMR, is the condenser mic.
Yeah. Mm.
So if you're able to have a studio, let's say, if you're in a closet, would you then want a condenser mic because it does pick up on, you know, everything that you're saying, and you have a situation where there's not going to be a lot of background noise?
To be honest, I think for podcasting, it's sort of just your personal preference. If you like the way that your voice sounds on a condenser mic, I recommend going with that. You know, we've had Zoom calls and such before, and I remember you've said you've liked the sound of my voice over Zoom before, and I'm using a condenser mic in my room. But at the same time, I think that a lot of the quality is going to come through vocal processing, which is something entirely separate from microphones.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting. Bonnie Williams, the VO superhero,
yes,
when she came on to talk about, what did she talk about? Like the voice quality. Voice quality and podcasting. She's awesome. But one thing that she said is she's got to find the mic. You got to find the mic to fit you.
Right.
And so that's to your point. Like you can try different mics out to figure out what works. What kind of mic do you have that you say you use on Zoom calls?
It's funny you ask because I want to say it's like a garbage, like $20, $40 condenser microphone, no name brand that I got off Amazon like 5 or 6 years ago. And it keeps on ticking.
That's impressive.
It is. Like you don't have to spend a ton of money on mics.
Yeah.
To have effective sound. Mm-hmm. So like if you wanted to get a $20, $40 mic, that could work pretty well.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of ways that you can doctor up, let's say a lower grade microphone too, to make it sound better. I've got a nicer preamp at my house. So an important step in the process is you need a digital audio converter, which is going to take the information from the microphone and turn it into a file or information that your computer can process.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of USB microphones, you know, the popular Blue Yeti, for example, that's got a digital audio converter built into it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's doing all of that information by itself. It might have a preamp on board that's sweetening the sound a little bit. In my case, I've got something that has a few more inputs. Gearheads out there might know Focusrite. It's a pretty popular brand. It's got a nice preamp on it. I'm pretty satisfied with it, but it's got more inputs. And for me, that works well because I do some recording, like music recording around the house sometimes. So I need that flexibility.
Gotcha. So the Yetis, that's what I use at my house. Like, so we've got a closet studio and I'll hang a Blue Yeti mic from there. Like, why are those so popular for podcasting?
Well, I think it's just a killer deal, honestly. I want to say it's like $100 and the sound quality is excellent. I really like how it has the multiple polar patterns.
Yeah.
So, you know, obviously cardioid is the typical polar pattern where it's sort of picking up the sound in a cone in front of the mic. But let's say you only have one microphone and you have two people, you can set it up to where it is bidirectional. So it is picking up in front of and behind the mic and get a pretty good sound out of that as well. Another thing I really like about the Blue Yeti is that it comes with its own software that you can use for vocal processing that'll add in EQ, compression, noise gate, and that'll really help you if you're doing like vodcasting or, you know, any sort of video recording or streaming, anything where you want your voice to sound good from the get-go and you're not really going to be doing as much editing afterwards.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Yeah, I remember, so my wife's podcast, Weddings for Real, how she started out is we just had one mic that she would put in on the table in her office. And so she would be over there. The guest would be where I am and hope that it was going to be about the same distance from each other and that the volume would pick up right. And I couldn't be in these recordings because I had a real job at the time. And so sometimes it worked out well. Sometimes it didn't work out well.
The real job is funny. So yeah. All of our jobs are fake.
No, my job is fake.
I'm kidding.
you know what I mean.
Yeah. I'm just messing with you.
So, Mark, what about some, like, not super low-level mics, but, you know, just
more beginner, maybe, or just simple.
Yeah, but, like, what about just using the iPhone? Like, is that okay for recording podcasts?
Yeah, you know, I don't think there's any problem with just doing a voice memo on your phone. That said, it sort of comes down to the situation. You know, thinking back to Carolina Connections with CC, I was in that class the semester that everything went virtual. And even before that, what someone had mentioned was they did like a Zoom call and they were having their guest record their part as a voice memo on their phone. And so something like that, I think, is really, really useful where you can dub that over the Zoom call. Because I think the quality from the iPhone voice memo is good. You know, it's just like any other microphone. As long as it's close enough to your face, you're going to get a good sound from it. And you can do that for your own podcast as well, I'd say. It might not be top dollar, but it'll be plenty good to get started with. The problem would come in if you're trying to do like two people recording on your phone.
In the same place. Yeah.
Yeah, that's going to get a bit messy.
So Cece, tell the audience what you do for some voiceover work for our podcast.
First of all, I'm coming for Bonnie's brand. I'm going to become a voiceover artist. No, just kidding. but I have a USB mic. I honestly don't even remember what it is now that because that hasn't been in the box in so long.
Yeah.
But I have a USB mic and I sit on my bed and put a blanket over my head whenever I do voiceover work. I look really funny, but I live in a studio apartment, so it's kind of big and empty. The ceilings are pretty tall. So I do that to like minimize the echo of it all.
And then do you sometimes use an iPhone as well?
Yeah. If I am out of town somewhere and I don't have my microphone, then you can do the same thing with an iPhone. And it sounds like really good quality. There are tons of podcasts that we've put out where it's got me voicing it over with an iPhone on my bed with a blanket on my head. And it sounds like I could be in the studio. Yeah.
Yeah. I would have no idea that it wasn't in the studio.
Secrets.
Yeah. But Mark, what we tell our guests and hosts a lot of times when they're recording remote is to, as a backup, or sometimes it works out even better, put the iPhone on their laptop, put the iPhone on their desk, and just pull up voice memos there. And that way we have multi-tracks, so we don't have to rely on just one track potentially if we're using StreamYard. We have multi-tracks, and they're crisp, clean tracks, meaning no reliance on Wi-Fi at all. So anyway, that's something where if you are doing remote recordings, using that iPhone at least as a backup can work really well.
I agree 100%. And you'd be like you've been saying, you'd be very surprised at the quality you're going to get from your iPhone voice memo.
Yeah. What about top dollar mics?
Some of my favorites. Obviously, you have the SM7B, which has become the choice of podcasters everywhere, what we're using here. Mm-hmm. The story, of course, this is what Michael Jackson used on stage. The thing about it is it comes with its own shock mount. You don't have to buy extra things to put it onto your stand. I also like how it has the frequency roll-off, this little part on the back right here. If you're in an area where you've got a lot of low rumble, you can roll that off. And so that's not going to come through in the live recording as much.
Like the sounds from that car that just drove down the street.
Yeah, or the construction across the street. Yeah. They'll never know.
They'll never know.
Another one of my favorites, though, is the Electro Voice RE20. This is something that's a bit more popular in radio broadcast studios. Similar price range. It does not come with the shock mount, but I personally like the sound just a little bit better.
What do you like about that? You said the sound is better?
Yeah, I personally like the frequency response a little bit better. I think that the Shure is really good for more of that low-end sound. And again, I really like the flexibility it offers.
Yeah.
But I think just something about the RE20, maybe it has like a little bit more high-end. At the end of the day, a lot of this is subjective. You know, you're going to find the mic that you like and because you like the way it sounds with your voice. And everyone's voice sounds different, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's true.
If we're getting into condenser mics, the AKG 414 is the best microphone I've ever used. It's extremely expensive, so I personally don't have one, but I used one while at UNC, and it was just dynamite.
What's extremely expensive?
I want to say it's in like the $800 range.
Ooh, that is
and
extremely expensive.
A lot of studios will buy what is called a matched pair, which is used to get stereo recordings of particular instruments. And that's even more expensive because they have to make it a particular way. You can't just send it down the manufacturing line.
So this is great information for mics. But then it becomes, okay, well, how exactly do you record all of this? Like where does it go from the mic into what? Like the iPhone is obvious. You've got the voice memos, but then what do you do with just a standalone Shure mic here? Like what's the next step there?
As I mentioned earlier, you're going to need a digital audio interface, and that's going to take several different forms. You might have the built-in thing like with the Blue Yeti, or you might have a traditional, like you might think of like as a musical interface. Like I've got Focusrite, the Presonus boxes are also very popular, pretty affordable. And then you've got more sort of all-inclusive podcast studio gear, the Rodecaster, which is what we use here at Earfluence. Very good piece of gear. They've also got similar things from Tascam and Zoom, all sort of like handheld recording devices now have their own sort of all-inclusive podcast studio gear.
Yeah.
And those are nice because you can use them by itself. Let's say you're in the field, you don't have your laptop, it'll record the file right there for you and you can access it later.
Mm-hmm.
But you also have the flexibility to connect it to a piece of recording software on your computer. If you're in the studio and you want individual tracks on your computer, you can set it to where you're getting individual feeds from the microphone in your recording software of choice.
So, okay. And the recording software of choice, is that like the Audacities, Auditions, mm-hmm. those things?
Absolutely. Yeah. We commonly refer to these as DAWs, digital audio workstations.
Okay. And so can you talk about those DAWs? Like, I personally will use Audacity. Mm-hmm. For me, it's easy to use. And, you know, I know what I need to know with Audacity. I know that you go next level with this stuff, but, you know, talk about, you know, the Audacity versus going into, say, Audition.
Well, with Audacity, the price is hard to beat. And
right.
it's free. Yeah.
And for a free software, it's been in development for a long time. I remember using Audacity 10 years ago. My high school band, Wasted Effort, we recorded our first demo tape on Audacity, which was just a hilarious experience to think back on. The recording quality was just terrible. Like, we were using this awful microphone I bought at Best Buy for like $50, recording in a tiny echoey room. The fun workaround, though, was we took these files and we basically like burned them to a CD and then burned that onto cassette tapes. Mm-hmm. And so the quality was already really bad.
Yeah, so you couldn't really tell.
Yeah, exactly. And it was punk rock. It was the cool thing to do at the time.
Right.
But getting back to DAWs, Audacity is great. It has everything you need. You can do multi-track editing on it. I don't remember if it does multi-track recording, but I think you can at least do like a two-track recording.
It's just
single-track
recording? It's single-track recording, and one trick with that is if you have multiple inputs going into your computer, mm-hmm. so let's say you're using two Yeti mics, and they're both connected to the same computer, you'll have to use what I call a mixer. You might have a better name for it, but a mixer called Voice Meter to mix that and then send it off to the Audacity one track. So you can't record two tracks at the same time within Audacity.
Mm-hmm. Voice Meter is a great software too. I was going to bring that up later because it's just a fantastic software if you want to do vocal processing. I want to say that's also like free or donation based as well.
Yep.
One of my friends uses it for his Twitch stream and he's just like has just incredible voice quality with it. But back to Audacity, I really like it because it's accessible. Anyone can download it. And it has all the tools. If you want to get into vocal processing, it has EQ, it's got compression, noise gate, all the tools of the trade. The trade-off is that the interface is a little bit difficult to use.
It looks like Windows XP.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and that's being generous. Like Windows 95, let's be real here. So to that end, it's a difficult software to learn on. Like if you really want to get into that sort of like, you know, adept level of editing, it's going to be difficult to use Audacity. But if you're just trying to cut up your stuff at home and maybe you're using a software like Voice Meter to sort of get that crisp sound going into it and you're not doing a lot of post-processing, Audacity is really tough to beat. Mm. I personally really like using Adobe Audition. A lot of great features on it. I think for podcasts where you're dragging in a lot of files into this, it's really helpful, the user interface. I like the loudness matching. All of the integrated features such as EQ compressor I think are really easy to use. A lot of good graphic information as well. And it's very flexible too. I think, you know, one of the benefits of Adobe softwares is if you're used to using one of them, it's pretty easy to navigate around the rest of them.
Yeah, for sure.
So how much does Audition cost?
It's a subscription-based software, so I want to say $20 a month. But if you're a student, you can get it at a better price. I think if you're a mm-hmm. student, you can get access to all of the Adobe softwares for $20 a month. So get your Photoshop, your Premiere mm-hmm. Pro, all of that.
Wow.
And if you wanted to get all of those things per month, that's what I do. So I can do all of our video stuff. It's like $50 a month, I think.
Awesome. That sounds like a good deal. All right. So you've got the microphones, you've got the mixers, and you had a better name for mixer. What was the name for the mixer?
Well, you can digital audio interface is what's going to take the sound from the mic to the computer. And that might take the form of a mixer or a preamp or many other things. But okay.
Talk about the tools for vocal processing that you mentioned. Mm-hmm. Like I know some of the basics and we can just kind of get into like what the basics would be. And then if there's others that, you know, you feel like, oh, we've got to use these also, you know, you can add those. But when I'm editing something, I always start with noise reduction. Is that what you start off with as well?
Yeah. Noise reduction is definitely the first piece of vocal processing.
Cut all that mess out.
Yeah, exactly. You don't want to deal with it.
Yeah.
And I think that a lot of your DAWs, your digital audio workstations, are going to have integrated noise reduction features. You know, Audacity as well as Audition. That all comes standard. Mm-hmm. If you're looking for some next level stuff, I really recommend RX from iZotope. sort of the industry standard for noise reduction. And it's awesome because you can use it as its own standalone software, and AI will sort of tell you, like, this is what you want to do. You want a deverb here. You want a gain boost here. We're going to do the spectral versus the voice noise reduction here. And so that's really helpful. But you can also use it as like a plugin with your DAW. Personally, a lot of the noise reduction I do, if it's something that's just like a really hard to work with file, I'll do the process, the integrated noise reduction process in Audition, and then I'll also add RX8's voice noise reduction as well. And then I think that sort of gets it down to pretty good quality, I'd say.
Wow. One thing that I learned initially was that you should, at the beginning of a recording, wait like 10 seconds, just get like 10 seconds of silence. Mm-hmm. And that way you can grab just that ambient noise.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can easily say to the DAW, like, this is the noise that I want to cut out of the entire track.
Exactly, yeah. And it's also useful when you're editing. Let's say that you have a really sort of like a rough cut. Like, yeah, it's a hard turn between one thing and the next.
Somebody's in the middle of a word.
Exactly. Yeah. You can use room tone to sort of fill in the gap and it'll sound pretty natural. I personally think that it sounds almost unnatural to sort of cut to silence unless the room tone itself is pretty close to silence.
Yeah.
Okay, gotcha.
Fun fact though, I forgot to record room tone a lot because I only go and I'd have no idea how to stop for a second and stand in silence. But if you ever forget that, you can take literally, like, even if you have a second of silence somewhere and like stick them all together and then you have a lot more.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, that does work.
Yeah.
Another sort of workaround that I'll do, and I think this works better for Zoom calls than for live recordings, is you can use pink noise. Like, you've heard of like white noise. Mm-hmm. Pink noise is very similar. And if you turn that down just really, really quiet, you can almost make like a new room tone. Like,
really?
Like, basically, it's just sort of having like a very small ambient noise in the background, I think, just sort of helps blend it all together. I don't personally do it as much anymore now that I'm getting better quality files and stuff, but like, for the not a novel stuff, it was a pretty useful tool. And again, for Zoom, I think it's pretty useful as well.
Huh, that's cool. I had not heard of that one.
It's more of a workaround than like something to rely on, but you know, in a pinch.
Yeah. Oh, nice. So then if I'm using Audacity, after I do noise reduction, I will usually do compression.
Mm-hmm.
Does that sound right? And then from there, what does compression do?
Just briefly, one of the age-old questions is, do you want to do EQ before or after compression? And I don't have a definitive answer for that. I think that that's, again, one of those what works best for you sort of situations. But to answer your question, compression is dynamic processing. And to sort of simplify that, what we're trying to do with compression is we're trying to make all the sounds more even. We want to take the louder sounds and sort of tone them down a little bit. We also want to boost the quieter stuff.
Mm. Okay, so then what does EQ do?
EQ is adjusting volume levels on specific frequencies.
Okay.
So what, and you can use it to different applications. So in vocal processing, the first thing I do is what's called a high pass filter. And so it's going to roll off pretty much all of the low end information below, like somewhere between 70 and 100 hertz.
And when you say roll off, you mean?
Just cut it out completely.
Yeah.
And you can sort of tone it down or cut it out completely depending on how you want to use it. But a lot of your noise, like when you think about noise, like cars from the road, you know, the construction across the street, that sort of stuff is low-end information. It's bassy. And it travels well because it's bassy. You think about the party down the road at 11 o'clock at night. You hear the bass more than you hear the high sounds.
Yeah.
Those sounds travel more.
I think it grabs some of, like, the P-pops, doesn't it, if you're running EQ on it?
Yeah, a lot of that sort of more explosive kind of sound, that gets tapered off as well with the high-pass filter.
Gotcha.
I also do a little bit of low-end boost, too. I think it sort of makes it feel like you're in the room with the person.
Mm-hmm.
This can sometimes be called a presence boost, but sometimes people will also do a presence boost in sort of the upper mid-range, somewhere between, like, let's say, like 400 and 1,000 hertz. And that's just going to make more of that higher end information stand out. Again, it's just to sort of make it feel like a bit more of an intimate sound. And then I also do a bit of subtractive EQ as well. I think there's this frequency range with everyone's voice where you kind of sound nasally and boxy. And what I sort of do is I try and take that out. And I think that just leaves it as a more clean sound.
Hmm. Okay. So does it matter who's on the recording? Meaning, like, I have a deeper voice, you have a deeper voice. CC doesn't have as deep of a voice as we do. But does that matter in determining what EQ you want to run on it?
It all depends. I think what it comes down to is, are you doing your vocal processing in post-production or during the recording?
Okay.
So we, with the Rodecaster Pro, we have the option to set up EQ before we start. And if you were doing a live event, you really want to go to the nines, you can do that and it'll give you a great sound. And you're not going to have to do as much of that in post-production.
Mm-hmm.
But in post-production, it's not really going to matter as much. Like, if you're not doing EQ before you're recording, then it doesn't matter who's on the mic. You're going to be able to adjust it to their personal voice. And as I said earlier, everyone's voice is a little bit different. So, you know, I might have like a go-to EQ setting that I really like, but I'm always tweaking it in between different hosts and guests.
Thank you so much for that advice.
So this is great. And so you said there's an age-old question of EQ versus compression. Which do you want to run first?
Yeah.
Which do you tend to do first?
I like doing EQ first, personally. Okay. I want to roll off that low-end information before it goes through the compressor.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, take as much out as you can before you, you know. It's like, I'm going to vacuum before I'm going to mop.
Mm.
That was just a quick metaphor. I don't even know if that makes
That's
sense.
That's good.
And I think cleaning it up is a good way to talk about it, because if we're talking about rolling off a lot of this noise with the high pass filter before we're getting to the compressor, which is going to raise the volume of those softer sounds, I think it makes sense to do it that way. You could add a second EQ after your compressor if you want. Maybe you're like, I really want to compress it and then really just sort of like push that low end sound. Like, they've got a really bassy voice. Let's boost it a little bit more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, you can get really creative with it. And I know tons of people do that with music. You know, you're really just trying to get like a cool sound. And so you might like experiment with different sequences of plugins and vocal processes.
And the more you do it, the more you can hear what's right and like what's wrong. And it's not necessarily even what's right and wrong, it's what you like. But especially for this, like, you want people to sound pretty natural.
Yeah.
And the more that you do it, the more you can tell if that's still, you know, the case.
So, Mark, I will usually run noise gate after that. And for something like this in the studio, I haven't seen a need for it too much. But when we're doing, say, intro, outro work, especially in my home with the Yetis, a lot of times it'll capture a breath sound and it tends to be pretty loud. Like, the Yetis really capture a lot of the sound, you know, much more so than these Shures do. And so with the breath, it's like kind of annoying. And so what I will do with noise gate is figure out how loud those breaths are and then reduce those, essentially, is what that is. So, like, you know, if any sounds are below a certain level, reduce those by a certain amount. Is that what you do as well sometimes?
For loud breaths, I do a couple different things. RX has a plugin that's called Breath Control. And if it's something where it's a reasonable volume, it can tone it down itself pretty easily.
Okay.
They even have a preset on it called Podcast Interview. And I think for a lot of what we do here in the studio, it just gives it a killer sound. You know, we're not listening to anyone breathing.
Mm-hmm.
But for, I think the worst of it is with Zoom recordings. I feel like people recording on Zoom, especially if they have like a bad internet connection and they already sound like weird, their breaths can sound awful.
Mm.
And for me personally, I have a hard time with the noise gate. I mean, you had mentioned how you will sometimes sort of duplicate the track and you'll use it to boost up things that the noise gate cuts off.
Yeah.
And I think that's a good tactic as well. But for me personally, I just sort of, while I'm going through it and, you know, getting all of the finer details, if it's an annoying breath, I'll just sort of like manually turn it
down.
That's
what I do too,
yeah. Yeah, I think that just gives me sort of the sound that I like.
Yeah.
And I don't necessarily get like super into it with the fades. What I think works well for me is just if I'm fading it out at the start of the breath, then it is sort of a natural decrescendo into it. Like, you recognize the fact that they are taking a breath, but it's not deafening.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah. And you, ultimately, you've got to go with what you like.
Yeah.
And what you are excited to put out.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is something that I always tell you, and, you know, I always tell our clients too, is every single episode is something that we want mom to put on the refrigerator as an A+.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Right? This is gold star work.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. What are some other tools for vocal processing that a beginner could use in Audacity or Audition or any of them?
I think something that sort of gets swept under the rug is something called saturation. And saturation comes from the old days where everything was done with vacuum tubes and, you know, physical hardware. And what that does is it just sort of gives it like a little bit of like a sweetness to it. And it can come in all sorts of different ways. Like you might have an EQ or a compressor that has like that is vacuum tube powered, or you might have something like that in post-production that you like using. Me personally, I have a compressor that I use for saturation. It's called El Rey. I believe it's from Aqua. And I got it because, you know, one of my mentors coming up was like, this is the best compressor I've ever used. And I think for voice, it's just dynamite. But it's like I said, you know, I think it's something that gets swept under the rug often because it's something that's more often connected to hardware than software. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, you know, we're sort of working on the basics. But I think if you're really trying to take it to the next level, saturation is something worth looking into.
Okay.
And like I said, that can take many different forms.
All right. All right. Great. And that's not something I have ever looked into before. Any others that we're missing?
I think just doubling back, it's important to sort of think about where you want your vocal processing. If you're doing it live, if you're doing it like a vodcast or a live stream, you're going to want your vocal processing done before any editing. And you can do that with hardware like the Rodecaster. Like for a lot of our live streams, all the EQ and compression is done there. And it's going to come out sounding great every time. You can also, if you're at home, you can look into VoiceMeter, the software that Jason mentioned earlier. Free or donation based, and you can set all of that up. If you have the Blue Yeti, you can set it up there. And that's definitely going to give you more of that studio sound. Like if you're trying to sound like NPR, that's what you're going to want for your stream. And then just another software, if we're talking about, you know, what you can use to edit, if you're looking for something that's a little bit more powerful than Audacity, but you don't want to break the bank, Reaper is a really popular software these days. Mm. And it's something that's come a long way in the last like 10 years, but it's, I think, $70 for a permanent license, and it's got much easier to use like EQ and compression tools than Audacity.
Okay.
And that's something you can do multi-track recordings in as well.
So, all right, Mark, let's do this as we get close to wrapping up here. We're recording in the Raleigh Founded studio, the Earfluent studio at Raleigh Founded in downtown Raleigh. And we are growing as a company. And so we may be going into other studios as well.
This is very vague. I like it.
At sometime soon.
Right.
Right. Okay. Now, you were hired after this studio came about.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Let's say you get a blank slate for a studio.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do? What kind of mics do you buy? What kind of soundproofing do you get? What kind of mixer do you get? Like, what's your blank slate? What's your ideal podcast studio?
Well, I'll tell you this. Acoustic treatment is its own beast entirely. You know, people get paid a lot of money to come into a space and make that, you know, just a nice quiet recording environment. But if I had a blank slate, I would want, I really like the setup we have here where we have like our, you know, our little foyer, and then we have our recording studio here. We can, you know, treat the guests to a nice beverage in the front room, stage people if we have a bunch of guests, like when we did the live event in July.
Mm-hmm.
I would want something like that. Aesthetically, I like what we have here at Raleigh Founded. I think the soundproofing is good. What I personally would want is I would want to make sure that the ceiling's well treated, acoustic tiles, bass traps, those sorts of things. I would want something that is, you know, ultimately well soundproofed, not a lot of outside noise. As far as gear, you know, I think I would want several different types of mics. I like how we have the Shores here, but I think I would want to try different things. Like if somebody really wanted to, let's say, sit down, maybe like, you know, we're talking about experimenting with lavalier mics. I think having that as an option would be really good. I would personally want like a different sort of digital audio converter than like what we have, but I would just want that flexibility. So something that is dry, where it's not got the vocal processing going into it.
Mm.
But at the same time, if I was doing more vodcasting and stuff like that in that space and streaming, I would want something like the Rodecaster.
Interesting. Okay, so what mixer would you want?
I'm not sure.
Write it down.
That's really tough to say. And then I think a lot of that also comes down to what software you're using. Like you think about a lot of professional studios, they have, it's all rolled into one, the mixer you would use in post and recording. Like people spend thousands and thousands, like tens of thousands of dollars on Pro Tools setups. And, you know, Pro Tools has been the giant in the industry for a long time. I personally don't like Pro Tools. I think it's not as user-friendly as it should be. And the integrated features like the EQ and compressor are not friendly for beginners. But it's good for live.
Okay.
That said, what I would want personally. I mean, I like the Rodecaster Pro, but I might like look around at some of these other things. I think the Zoom PodTrack is something worth looking into that works like very similarly.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, for software, I'm probably just going to keep using Audition if I get the choice.
You really can't go wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I really like, I'll use Studio One as a software to record music with and edit music with, but I am just, like I said, I think Audition for podcasting, I think it's just got all the tools.
Absolutely.
So one quick follow-up is you said experiment with different mics. Would you then, so we have four Shures here.
Mm-hmm.
And my theory was we keep it uniform.
Yeah.
Now, are you talking about having, if we have four mics, like having them be different mics? Like, is there any sort of danger in it sounding different?
I think if it's going through the same vocal processing, I think it's going to have a pretty uniform sound. Like, let's say in our studio, if we had two Shures and two RE20s, I think the difference is going to be pretty marginal. But I think there is something to be said for uniformity. I personally, like, I come from a cooking background. You want to have the same meal every time you go to that restaurant. So I think if you're coming into the Earfluence studio, you know, you want to have the same mic in front of you pretty much every time.
I also think going back to what we were saying, though, everybody sounds different. So everybody, like, my voice is not going to sound like yours, not going to sound like his, no matter what, even though we are on the same microphone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
I think something like this where we have a full set for a group podcast, but let's say if you're doing more one-on-one type stuff, having more options so that people can experiment and find out what they like. I think that's a good idea.
Yeah.
And, you know, if I had like an unlimited budget to open my own studio, that's something I would look into. You go to a lot of recording studios, that's ultimately what you're paying for is the space they have and the gear they have.
Yeah. Well, you don't have an unlimited budget, but hopefully soon we'll get you your own space.
Yeah, wink, wink.
Yeah. All right. You alluded to restaurants.
Yes.
All right. So let's ask a few fun questions here.
I'm about it.
Okay. So you live in Durham. You went to school in Chapel Hill.
Mm-hmm.
In the Triangle, give us your favorite or top couple favorite restaurants to go to.
It all depends on the mood. Let's say I am looking for something just like really, really nice. I am a big fan. Oh gosh, it's tough to say too, because I really liked one of my favorites was Lula's in Chapel Hill that they just shut down.
Mm.
So one of my favorites right across the street from Raleigh founded is Humble Pie. I worked there for a long time. If you're looking for Southern food, it's really hard to beat, but they also definitely, Chef Josh, he does a lot of things that are influenced by world cuisine, you know, like you'll get some nice short ribs or like some good miso flavoring and something you wouldn't see it in. And plus, if you get the bread pudding there, it's just incredible. No pie. The name is misleading.
Yes.
No
pie. They have really good brunch too.
Yeah. And the patio is the best in Raleigh, I would say.
Awesome.
If I'm going for something, let's say I've been drinking and I'm looking for something good. The Dankery in Durham was my favorite food truck for a long time, and they just opened up their first physical location.
Yeah. Mm.
It's just incredible. Like wings, chicken tenders, fried shrimp, great sandwiches, loaded fries, just tough to beat. And then, you know, for pizza, I really like Trophy Pizza in Raleigh. I think they have a lot of great flavors. The beer's killer too. I also like Pizza del Toro in Durham.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned a couple places to go drinking. Is Trophy one of your favorites, or what else would you recommend?
I mean, for beer, I think that they have just the best, like, wild flavors. Like, one of my favorites that they ever did was the King. It was the peanut butter banana Belgian double, and it was incredible flavor. I love it. I like Bond Brothers. The brown ale there is really good. I'm a big fan of Red Oak, too. I mean, theirs is, you know, it's tough to get to the tap room from Raleigh, but, like, just the amber. Like, that's probably my favorite North Carolina brew is the Red Oak Amber.
You know what we should do is take a Earfluence trip to Red Oak and like get a bus or something like that. I think that'd be fun.
The Christmas party, you know?
Yeah.
All three of us, one whole bus. I also can't drink beer, so maybe if they have a cider or something.
All right, let's go to Drive Shack or something. all right, Mark, this is awesome. One final question, and I alluded to it offline here. You went to a friend's wedding this past weekend.
Right.
Everybody's getting married. What's
Everybody's
that about?
Everybody's getting married. So for your, you know, honeymoon in the future or dream vacation or something like that, where would you go?
I'm going to stick with Japan as my answer. And that's for a couple reasons. Like I said, the eating tour of Japan. I'm a big fan of sushi. I'd really got to get like the finest stuff. And so I'd love to go there. You know, I recently read Kitchen Confidentials from Anthony Bourdain. He talks about the fish markets in Tokyo. It sounds incredible. I'd love to see that. But more so, I want to go snowboarding in Japan. Hokkaido, the northmost island, it has some of the highest natural snowfall totals in the world. And so I'd love to just go and just like tear it up there.
That sounds amazing. Kitchen Confidential. That book is illuminating for the restaurant industry. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And that's the thing. It's like, I would always tell people, I'm like, yeah, that's what it's like before I had actually read it. And after reading it, I'm like, yeah, that's pretty much it. You know, it's not quite as clean cut as you'd think.
Wow. All right, Mark. Well, thank you so much for coming on the Earfluence podcast and teaching all of us, me especially, about editing and what needs to be done to make a great podcast. It's so fun to record all these episodes, but to make them great sounding, we rely on you for the editing process. So we very much appreciate that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like I said, it's great to be here. And one of my biggest things is I don't want knowledge to be veiled. I know that like the jargon behind all of editing and stuff can be really complicated and compression. It's so hard to wrap your head around it the first couple times you're using it. And so like if anything was confusing or if like people out there need help, and I too am still a student. I'm always learning. So if anyone wants to reach out and talk about this to learn more, just look at me up on LinkedIn.
Yeah, or email mark@earfluence.com.
That's the one.
All right. Well, Mark, thank you so much again. Cece, thank you for coming on, of course.
Yes, of course.
And thank you all for listening. For Cece Huffman and Mark Meyer, I'm Jason Gillikin, and you've been listening to the Earfluence podcast.
And if you're looking for full-service podcast production, visit www.earfluence.com.
Thank you. This is why you're on.
Bye, everyone.